This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Wednesday afternoon, May 29th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. 90s fashion making a major comeback, and retailer Abercrombie & Fitch is benefiting in a big way. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, the Illinois House has approved the $53.1 billion budget that the state Senate passed over the weekend. Let's discuss the proposed spending plan with Andy Shaw, former political reporter for ABC 7 and president and CEO of the Better Government Association from 2019 to 2018. Andy, thank you for joining us today. And speaking as someone who remembers when it took well over a year to reach a budget not too long ago, the fact that one came together over the course of a weekend, at least to this seasoned and jaundiced eye, is a miracle in and of itself.
Well, what a difference a Democratic-controlled legislature and a Democratic governor make. Remember, during the Republican era of Bruce Rauner, there was an endless budget fight with the Democrats, led at that time by House Speaker Michael Madigan. Things are a lot more friendly these days. There was some pushback in Springfield over the weekend from some Democrats who didn't like the new budget. But at the end of the day, this is what you'd expect from a Democratic-controlled legislative process. It's a budget that has a little bit of something for everyone. Almost all the constituent groups should be pleased. Not so much the Chicago Teachers Union and Mayor Johnson here in Chicago, because they didn't get the big increase they were asking for, and nothing of great note for the Chicago Bears, who wanted help for their stadium. And of course, there are going to be some business folks who are unhappy with higher business taxes, and the gambling interests are going to be paid more in taxes. But outside of that, almost everybody's a winner in this budget if you think that spending a lot of money is a good idea. This budget, Rob, is $2.5 billion more than last year. That's a 5% increase. All the lawmakers get 5% raises. They're already making more than $90,000 for part-time jobs. And all this spending, of course, has the Republicans in Springfield extremely angry. They felt there should have been a lot more austerity, no tax increases, budget cuts, but you don't see that with a Democratic-controlled body.
$1.1 billion in revenue increases, as you point out. It is the result of a hike on business taxes and on sports books for legalized sports gambling, which has been a source of new revenue for the state of Illinois since it was legalized in 2020. You talk about how all the constituent groups get something out of this budget. What is in it for you, the taxpayer?
Well, I don't think there's very much for the taxpayer directly, but if you're a consumer of services, you're going to be very happy. There's a lot more health care benefits. There's after school programs. The child tax credit is increased. And so if you're a consumer of government goods and services and programs, you're going to be happy because almost everything you rely on is getting an increase. Also, if you're a migrant and even a non-citizen, the state is spending $750 million additional dollars to help those folks. And that, of course, really fried a lot of Republicans who felt that people who are migrants and non-citizens should not be getting the benefit of all these tax dollars. But the Democrats are in control, and I think they believe in really helping people. Let me say one thing as the former head of the BGA. I'm disappointed that they didn't impose a hiring freeze on non-essential services. And I'm also disappointed that they still have not begun to do anything about the excessive number of taxing bodies in Illinois, which contribute to high property taxes. We have the most taxing bodies of any state in the country by more than a third, and it's time for the state to start getting rid of some of those. They took not one step in that direction. So from the good government standpoint, that's disappointing. If I'm a Democrat, I'm thrilled. If I'm a Republican, I'm unhappy. If I'm a watchdog, I'm moderately unhappy.
Andy Shaw, former political reporter, ABC7, and former president and CEO of the Better Government Association from 2009 to 2018. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, helping us break down the budget that's now heading to Governor Pritzker's desk.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Apparel retailer Abercrombie & Fitch showed sales growth in the first quarter that easily exceeded expectations. Let's track the clothing comeback with Zachary Waring, Vice President of Equity Research, CFRA in Williamsburg, Virginia. Zachary, thank you for joining us today. And Abercrombie & Fitch at one time was such a fashion and pop culture behemoth. I mean, it wasn't all that long ago. The band LFO said, "I like girls who wear Abercrombie & Fitch." Check that. That was 23 years ago in 2001. And since then, the brand has taken its lumps, Zachary, but it seems to be, not only is it experiencing a comeback, it's having a bit of a renaissance.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me. It was another good quarter. They've been seeing this kind of momentum here for about 12 months now. And, you know, we kind of credit it to their social media marketing campaign. So they're using, influencers to push their products, you know, through TikTok and Instagram. And it's really working for them. These influencers, they get affiliate, you know, links, and they get a little piece of the action too. So, you know, it's pretty cool. Obviously, it was a big brand when I was growing up, and it looks like it's making a little bit of a comeback.
Yeah, Abercrombie really was tip of the top, late 90s, early 2000s. And that was, you know, the cast of Dawson's Creek was wearing their clothes. I mean, you talk about influencers. I mean, they were it 25 years ago. So what's bringing people back? Is it nostalgia, or do the kids think it's cool once again?
I think it's a little bit of both. So I think the younger generations, you know, are bringing it back. And then, you know, you've got millennials who are also, you know, a little bit of nostalgia there. And so I think they're kind of benefiting from a little bit of both, but I think they've really capitalized by, you know, the way that they're marketing. And I think that's kind of how, you know, it's come back.
And then, Zachary, in the retail space, I mean, just above and beyond Abercrombie, in the world of fashion, are we in the midst of a 90s retro moment, which Zachary kind of gives me a headache because, as far as I'm concerned, the 90s weren't that long ago?
Yeah, you're seeing it with a couple of different brands. You know, Ralph Lauren, they're doing pretty well right now. Obviously, Abercrombie's another name. And so, you know, you're starting to see, I think Abercrombie has been the biggest beneficiary, but you're definitely starting to see it from some of those other late 90s brands.
Now, when I think of the 90s, I mean, I break it down into the decade into two halves. Like, the first half of the 90s was the hypercolor. It was Bugle Boy. It was lots of teals and fluorescent colors. And then the second half of the 90s is that's the cargo pants portion of the 90s. And does that mean cargo pants are making a comeback?
You know, I don't know about cargo pants. You know, they are making a little bit of a comeback, but I don't think, you know, that's the driver of their growth. I do think that late 90s look, you know, outside of cargo pants, I would say, denim is really making a comeback for these younger generations.
Zachary Waring, Vice President of Equity Research at CFRA in Williamsburg, Virginia. Thank you for joining us today to talk about the renaissance at Abercrombie & Fitch. Coming up next, hiring your own kids and getting a tax break as a bonus.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Personal Finance Wednesday. If you're self-employed, there could be tax benefits to giving your own kids a job. Let's discuss the ins and outs with Elizabeth Buffardi, founder of Crescendo Financial Planners, co-chair of the Personal Financial Planning Forum for the Illinois CPA Society based in Oak Brook. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us today. It is the dream of business ownership. It's the American dream to own your own business, experience some success, and then really have that life you always wanted, the suburban home, the white picket fence, and 2.5 little tax deductions running around the backyard.
Exactly.
Now, if you do go into business for yourself, what are some of the tax implications of putting your kids on the payroll?
So as you want to make sure that you're not going to run afoul of any labor law rules. But the big reason is because, one, it gives your kids earned income. And two, with earned income, you can then contribute to a Roth IRA for your children.
Now, when we talk about making sure you don't run afoul of any labor laws, when we talk about employing your kids as part of a family business, what is a representative example of doing that?
Whoa, that's a great question. And I am no expert in labor law at all. But I believe that there is something to the effect of your children have to be above the age of 13. Not 100% on that. But the other thing, too, is that when you do pay your children, it's not like you can give them a $100,000 salary, you know, if they're 13 years old. You need to, the compensation of whatever it is that they're doing for you has to be representative of what you would pay somebody else to do that same thing. So a lot of, like in the financial planning industry, a lot of people will hire their kids to help them do all the shredding and that sort of stuff.
And then by employing your kids as part of your family business or as part of your self-employment operation, is there some way you can knock down your tax liability on the business?
Yes, because what happens is the wages that you pay your child end up being tax deductible to your business, and then the taxes that you pay for on the employer side of things are also tax deductible.
And then is this something that is commonly known in the world of people who own their own businesses? Because you often hear the stories of, you know, my dad founded the business and then I started working for it at the age of 14, and that this was part of their very inspiring self-made man or woman story. And are we being led to believe this entire time this up by the bootstrap story was simply because their parents needed some tax breaks?
No, it's more because your parents need some help and you're cheap labor as the child.
So that's the reason why. It's still on the up and up, but the IRS also makes it worth your while.
Yeah. Speaking of the IRS, you're going to want to make sure that, especially if your children are very young, that you're documenting what they're doing, how many hours they're spending doing whatever it is that you're asking them to do and that sort of thing. Because if you ever get audited, you want to make sure that you have proper documentation to say that, yes, this really happened.
Elizabeth Bifardi, founder of Crescendo Financial Planners and co-chair of the Personal Financial Planning Forum for the Illinois CPA Society in Oak Brook. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead on this Personal Finance Wednesday, money questions to ask on a first date.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A more than $50 billion state budget is now on Governor Pritzker's desk. Deliberations are underway at the Trump criminal trial in New York. In Personal Finance Wednesday, spicing up a first date with a discussion on money. Nissan warns owners of older vehicles not to drive them due to risk of exploding airbag inflators. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 344 points, the NASDAQ is down 53, and the S&P 500 is down 27. We have 67 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies at 12:31, topping our news of the half hour. The Illinois General Assembly has passed a $53.1 billion state budget package. The spending plan cleared the Illinois House early this morning after being approved by the state Senate over the weekend. The budget now awaits Governor Pritzker's signature. Deliberations are underway at former President Trump's trial in New York. CBS News correspondent Errol Barnett says the judge gave jurors detailed instructions this morning.
He told them that you must not forget the fundamental principle here is that defendants are innocent until proven guilty, and the burden of proof is on the people. And so the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Donald Trump committed these crimes. He also emphasized that they were told to set aside any opinions, any bias they have for or against the defendant.
The jury of seven men and five women began to deliberate around 10:30 this morning. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are in the the red once again today. Let's see what's worrying Wall Street with J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America, president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. J.J., thank you for joining us today. And it's kind of a strange thing to say, J.J., in a week in which the NASDAQ set a new record high. But this pullback today, and especially the retreat by the Dow over the last couple of days, what can we make of all of this?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, it's not unhealthy. So the biggest thing I think the audience needs to take away is this is okay, to your point. We've just made record highs. We've had an incredible run. You know, you think about the traditional saying has always been sell in May and go away. Well, if you sold in May and came back, you're anything but happy at the moment. So for investors overall, it's been a pretty, pretty good month. And I think that that's where you have to start from. Well, one of the reasons for today is there's just been a shift in attitude that is continuing to hit the market in terms of will we get any rate cuts this year? And, you know, you had Minneapolis Fed President Kashkari just talk about that they could hold rates for even longer. And in a week, we saw a pretty big shift in, you know, less more than a 50% probability of a rate cut by the end of the year to now about a 54% chance that nothing will happen. So that has been a really big switch mentally.
Now, were there also some signs that maybe the market was oversold or overbought leading into this particular moment? I mean, the Dow did hit 40,000 a week ago. You have the NASDAQ setting a new high. Is it possible that investors just got out over their skis over the past couple of weeks they're resetting a little bit?
I think that's a great way to think about it. And so, you know, just one case in point. So look at NVIDIA, which we all know has been an incredible leader in what's gone on. Last week, you know, 1 week ago today, the 22nd, NVIDIA closed at $949.50. Today, it's as we speak, is trading over $1,145. So here's a stock that from earnings has rallied almost 15% in a week. Now, we know there was some positive news about the split, et cetera. But again, these are the kind of things where when you see them happen, you're like, wow, that just seems unusual to see that kind of crazy move this quickly. And it's a stock that's actually one of the leaders in the clubhouse, if you will, today. It's still up about 0.5%. And so with that, to your point about out over their skis, I think you sometimes come to these situations, and you and I have seen them a lot in our careers, where people just feel like they have to maybe participate because we're near all-time highs. And again, some of this being stocks has still been the best game in town, so to speak. And the second part being, you know, the good part about some of this is the downward movement today hasn't necessarily discouraged investors from buying what they see as quality stocks.
Big move in the energy space. Marathon and ConocoPhillips are announcing a merger. And what does it say about the oil and gas space writ large? It's been a couple of years of volatility in the oil markets. And what does this merger represent?
Well, you would hope what it represents is competition being a good thing in the fact that, you know, one company buying the other hopefully makes both more efficient and economies of scale there. The bad part about that being there was one less company competing. Now, to your point, the crude oil has had a very volatile time over the last few years. The last few months, it's really been hanging between the $70 and $80 a barrel range. As we speak right now, it's just below $80. And so I think that, you know, again, if it can make things more efficient, that's a good thing. We haven't seen electric car pickup, perhaps, in many ways that people would thought. So the demand for gasoline still continues to be higher. And I just think one other note, Rob, that people should take note of today when we talk about the market itself going down and what that means for investors. The VIX, which measures volatility index, and just bought up volatility in terms of crude oil. But in terms of the overall market, the VIX is still trading only just under $14. $20 is usually an area where you start to say, hey, that's something we should be taking note of. So overall, the market, at least as of right now, is viewing this as sort of a blip on the radar for today's downward movement.
J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America, president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, having an honest discussion about money during a first date.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. A major sticking point in relationships can be money. Sometimes it's best to get things out in the open right away. We're joined by Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago, the website engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thank you for joining us today. Now, if you're out on a first or a second date with that special someone, does this mean you should hit them with the 401k right away?
No, Rob. You know, I am not encouraging listeners to share FICO scores or credit reports on the first or second or even third date. But it's important as the relationship progresses to get to know your partner from a financial point of view to avoid any kind of surprises.
And on top of that, I mean, it's a good thing. It's just a good thing to talk about over the course of a couple of dates, just so you're not staring at each other in silence. And it is part of the getting to know each other process. I mean, everyone has attitudes about money. And if you don't talk about it, then you're going to talk about it later.
It's an excellent point, Rob, because we all know, based upon statistics, that money is one of the sticking points with most relationships. So understanding someone's money DNA, right? How do they handle money? What is their relationship with money? Are you a spender or are you a saver? These are all good things to get out in front to make sure, again, that you're aligned not only personality-wise, but also financially.
And we don't even talk about your own personal holdings or your asset allocation or even the number that's in your bank account. You talk about your relationship with money and whether you're a spender or a saver. I mean, maybe you can just start out with how you talked about money growing up. You know, what was it, a source of stress or was it a source of knowledge?
Exactly. We often refer to this as your money DNA. So each of us has our own history and our own pathway with money and our own experiences. And just to get to understand the way someone is wired when it comes to money is really important. But things like I had mentioned earlier in terms of debt, especially with younger couples, if you have a lot of college debt, it's not going to be your debt or my debt. After you say I do, it's going to be our debt. And how are you going to handle that and prioritize it? These are kind of things that, again, not necessarily appropriate for the first date, but to have these good conversations sets the path for future conversations when things may become more stressful. So again, having those conversations early on will give you a good idea in terms of compatibility.
Now, I said you don't necessarily have to talk about specific figures in your own life, but eventually you're going to have to admit how much you make to the other person and also talk about your target annual income. But I'm guessing that's within reason. You can't just sit there and say, you know, $11 billion and not a penny less.
Yeah, Rob. And again, you're not sharing all these documents or tax returns in 1040s. But again, to make sure that you are both on the same page, because you both can make a lot of money. But if you're spending a lot of money as well, that may not get you too far financially into the future. So, you know, sharing those numbers eventually, I think, is a very good idea. So again, what we're trying to do is avoid surprises. We don't want any surprises to come out after the fact, because then that just is going to create a lot of issues, obviously, not only today, but well in the future. So have those good conversations up front, share what's comfortable, and then make sure you try to be as aligned as possible going forward, again, to create that great family and great financial future.
It's also a good dress rehearsal for the difficult financial discussions you're going to have down the road when you do eventually get married, because you're going to have the discussion about how to pay for daycare and potentially who stays home when a child comes along. So you might as well see how you react in one difficult conversation before you have another difficult conversation down the road.
Yeah, you want to have a meeting of the minds before it gets what I'll say quite interesting. I mean, you don't want to have arguments and then discuss. You want to have these discussions up front. We all know life changes tomorrow. So while you could be aligned today, challenges in the future, job-wise or otherwise, may happen. And again, if you've got this sort of shared vision of the future, it's very helpful to get that sort of out of the way now to make sure you are compatible. But again, you know, we love good times and in bad, right? That's the vows we make. And then ultimately, if bad times come, having those good conversations ahead of time in terms of what-if scenarios would be very, very helpful. We do that today with our clients, not only our younger clients, but our older clients, again, to make sure that as best as we can to be aligned to, again, avoid all those future issues as best we can.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Find them online at engagewealthgroup.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, there appears to be no end in sight to problems with Takeda airbags.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Nissan is urging owners of more than 80,000 older vehicles to stop driving them because their Takeda airbag inflators are at high risk of exploding in a crash. It's the latest chapter in a seemingly never-ending saga. Let's check in with John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. John, thank you for joining us today. And the models and the model years affected are all cars that are at most 20 years old. So these are cars that have been on the road for a very long time. And how come they were not flagged before?
Oh, Rob, this is crazy. Like you said, this Takeda recall for airbags started 20 years ago. The Nissans that are involved here, like you said, they're 20-year-old cars. I mean, these things are almost ready for the scrap heap. But it turns out about 20% of the public just ignores any recall notice. They can't be bothered by it, or, you know, they don't want to go to the dealership, they don't get their cars fixed. And so this is driving the automakers crazy. Clearly, Nissan doesn't want anybody to get injured in any of its cars, even as old as they are. But they're probably also worried about a lawsuit, because if one of these people who has ignored the recall does get in an accident and gets injured by the airbag, they're going to sue Nissan. So it's just crazy that it's been going on this long.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that may be blindingly obvious in the automotive space, but I think a lot of people may not know the answer to it readily, and that is, if we're talking about a 20-year-old car and you're two or three owners down the line, how can the car company fine you?
That's a good question. I mean, because you're not the original owner, more than likely. It can be very difficult. In fact, I think it was Honda literally sent people out knocking on doors until, I mean, one of the people knocking on the doors had someone pull a gun on them. You know, so they've gone to extraordinary lengths to try to track these people down that have got cars that need to have the airbags replaced. And it'll probably never get resolved because, like I said, about 20% of the people, that's one out of five, have no interest in getting their car fixed because of a recall.
Above and beyond the 84,000 Nissan cars that are affected by this do not drive notification, have we reached the end of where have we found or do we think we have found where all of these defective Takeda inflators have we got to the bottom of it, got to the bottom of this, or will there be more to come?
Well, you know, nothing's ever perfect. You never want to say, okay, we resolved this completely. There's always going to be something out there. But, and this, you know, these Takeda airbags have gone into, you know, the cars of almost every major automaker. They've all gone through this. Nissan is just the latest to try to find the people in these very old cars. But, yeah, it's just crazy for them to try and get it resolved. I would not say it's completely resolved. I'll bet there's still something lurking out there.
John McElroy, automotive industry analyst, host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. Thanks for joining us today.